Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton, speaking to us by phone from his office. If you've got a question for him, you can pick up your telephone and call 765-496-1999. You can send an email to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was very nice, thank you. Yeah, it was a nice, relaxing holiday, which was very good.
Did you go anywhere?
You know, I stay right around the area. I have family all in the area, and just stayed around here and just kind of enjoyed some downtime. All the kids were home, and it was kind of fun.
Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. Let's get right to it, because I've got a lot to talk to you about since we had you on the program last. You, about 10 days ago now, gave an update on your city's stellar communities planning and the construction that's associated with that. I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about some of the things that you mentioned. The Pocket Park, which we've talked a little bit about, you've said that it says the majority of the grounds are going to be green space there. And so I'm kind of wondering, is that behind schedule at all? Because it would seem like putting together a park is not as difficult, and I'm not an architect, obviously, is not as difficult necessarily as putting together a building like Fusion 54. Are you kind of feeling like you could have gotten the park done earlier, or is this the plan all along?
Well, I guess we should modify it by saying putting together a park with federal funding. So when you do that, it certainly changes the timeline. There's no doubt about that. You know, we had hoped to do that park this year. And when we made changes to the Fusion 54 project, we transferred some of that federal block grant funding over to these parks. And in doing so, we knew that that was going to cost us basically a year in the process, because we would have to step back and go through some more hoops and take some steps that we didn't originally plan on taking. So as a result, we moved that back a year, and that will break ground next spring. The trade-off was, and I was, you know, very upfront with the public about this, was that, hey, you know, we're going to move this back a year, but in the end, we will be able to incorporate all the things you told us you wanted in this type of park. Without the federal funding, it was going to be a very bare-bones basic park. For example, restrooms. We were not going to be able to afford that. But now with the block grant funding in place, we can. So it's a trade-off, push it back a year, basically added $1.5 million to the project, roughly. And it's probably an understatement to say it's just green space. It's a well-designed, laid-out space with a lot of landscaping, restroom facilities, a stage, all those kinds of things, and you're incorporating a lot of different elements there. So we actually had a meeting yesterday afternoon to go through the plans again. They're about 60% complete. We're nailing down some of the specifics right now, and I think it's going to be a really nice amenity and asset to our community.
And so in terms of some of the other things that are in that plan, I see that there's also a plan for some barriers in there. Can you tell me more about those? Because there's a number of different ways I've seen that done. In some cases, parks might have them be movable so that you can, you know, for instance, cordon it off from traffic. You can put down bollards, or you can put in a gate or something like that. How does that all work?
Well, the short answer is we don't know yet. You know, we're still – that was part of the discussion yesterday in our meeting. There are several options there, from actually doing nothing, you know, and putting up a barricade like you do now, which is probably not the most attractive in the world, through bollards that are removable, through bollards that are embedded and you raise them up, through more of a gate type of approach that you swing around and put in place. And we don't know right now what we will be doing there. We have several options on the table. And the reality is that we have to really hone in on this budget a little tighter. There are a couple unknowns in there to see where we're at on the dollars and cents, and then we will know which option we're going with. But the goal is to do something that's very functional, very easy to use, and looks nice both when the street is closed and when the street is open. Another concern I have, and this gets to be really problematic, is just making sure we create a barrier that makes it very clear to people this is not a place to drive when the street's closed, because occasionally the barricades, people drive around those, they get confused, and we certainly don't want that situation happening. So there's a lot to think about in that equation, and we will be meeting again mid-December and really nail down the answer to that question.
I see that you're moving forward with the new Fusion 54 plan as well, moving people out of that what has been a bank building and trying to get it all set up so that you guys can inhabit it the way you want to. Have you gotten a final cost estimate on what all of that is going to cost? People may remember that you originally wanted to build your own building and then decided that was cost prohibitive because of the way some of the funding worked, and so you decided to try to take over the space of an existing building. Do you know what that new plan is going to cost in total?
Yeah, again, we're about 60% complete, so we're not quite there. We have some ballparks, but we're really trying to refine those numbers yet. So we're getting pretty close to knowing that. We kind of have, you know, like I said, a ballpark. We know the area we're in, but still a few details to work out and a few things that we can give and take on depending on where we think we're at dollar-wise. What will end up happening, I think, is there will be some optional things in those bidding packages, because in reality, what you're working with right now are just estimates. And when it's put out to bid, you don't know what will happen. Those bids may come in less than what your estimates were, which I hope is the case, or they might come in higher than what the estimates actually were. So you have to build in some ability there to adjust depending on that market. We're trying to time bidding that to get the best prices possible, and I've really been working behind the scenes to reach out to companies that do that kind of work to make sure we get lots of bids and get very competitive bids so we're not in that situation where there's only one bidder and they're way over.
Moving on to talk about the Big Four Trail, as it's become known, it looks like you guys are now trying to secure private funding to do that. Is that right?
Right, and that's been the plan all along with that particular trail, is to put that on the private side. And you know, we have a private source identified that we feel at least relatively comfortable we can get the funding. The key there is to get the rail line out. And, you know, I know people are cynical and don't think that'll happen, but it actually is moving forward. And what has to happen to make that work is that there has to be a rail facility elsewhere to unload for that one customer on that line. Once that is accomplished, this will move forward rather quickly. In this particular case, CSX operates that line, and they want out of there, you know, as of yesterday, if they could have done it. So they're on our side in this, and we're trying to make it happen, just nailing down some specifics on that facility elsewhere and how that will operate and be funded and everything. So we're pretty close there. I think we'll see some activity there. I'm hoping in the next few months, the one customer involved has had some staffing changes, so we've kind of had to work through new people coming in, and you know, they obviously have a lot of other responsibilities, so this gets added to the pile. And but we're getting close there. But certainly doing it on the private side, you know, the reality is that we can do it in a third the time at probably a third the cost by doing it on the private side or with local funding versus the federal highway funding that comes through NDOT.
Why is it a third the cost?
The requirements to get added in when you use the federal funding literally, and this is my estimation, but literally double to triple the cost of a project. The downtown trail that we're doing right now has a lot of pieces built in that if we were doing it on our own, we could do much quicker and much less expensive and still have a very quality product.
I remember when the folks from OCRA, the Office of Rural Affairs, were in and you were showing them around as you were trying to sell them on the idea of awarding you the Stellar Grant. You walked them through the Ben-Hur building and talked about all the cool things that could be. And now it looks like you're kind of in danger of having to go back to the drawing board on that one.
Well, that project has lagged behind, and that has been the one project that we've really struggled to make move forward. Everything else is either on schedule or ahead of schedule except that particular project. And, you know, I think we're in a good position with that project because the building has been stabilized. We've had a lot of discussion with the existing developer, and the county and the city are working on this jointly. So there are some key deadlines in that developer's agreement with the county when they acquired it on back taxes. There's some key deadlines coming up in December and January, and we need to let those deadlines come and go. And I'm confident that we have a plan for moving that forward at that point, whether that means with this developer or transferring it to a new developer and moving from there. You know, those types of projects, you tend to run into this. I mean, you work and work and work to find the right developer, and even at that, sometimes it doesn't work out, and this appears to be one of those cases. But for me, it's all about persistence. And you know, if we are struggling with the developer to get the project moving, I'm certainly not going to give up. I'm going to step back, and we're going to reapproach this again and go at it from a different angle. So a little disappointed. We'd like to see it moving forward by now, but we're certainly not giving up on it.
Do you have another developer waiting in the wings in case things fall through as you suspect they might?
Yeah, we've had discussions with several developers on that building. So there are very strong possibilities, and there's a lot of interest in that building. You know, I think the interesting thing, you know, at one time there were a lot of buildings like that out there on the on the market, you will, if you will, that people who specialize in that niche could find and work on. That supply is dwindling, so that building is very attractive in that market because there aren't many opportunities like that left out there. So there's a lot of interest in it, and I'm confident we'll find the right mix.
You were talking initially about, for instance, things like a rooftop restaurant on top of that that people could go to, especially during the summer months, because you're talking about, for people who don't know, it's a building that's pretty large. It's on a prominent corner in downtown Crawfordsville. Do you think that you might have to change the expectations of what the building could become if you went to a different developer?
Well, I think any developer will probably change those plans, and I understand that they may need to change things here and there to make the scenario work, you know, financially. You know, maybe that doesn't sustain itself financially and they need to look at something else. We're certainly open and we're flexible in how that's approached. That being said, I think there are key things that we will really lobby for very heavily that we feel will work in our community. And that's always the message we have for a developer. You know, I understand that they're going to run their numbers and they're going to do all those things, but at the end of the day, you know, they also have to listen to input from us about what the local community wants to see in a property and what we think will be successful here. And we've done that with some projects. You know, developers said, well, running the numbers, we're not sure. And we said, well, you know, we really think if you do A and B and you do it well, this community will receive it very well. And that's played out.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Call in your questions at area code 765-496-1999. Email them to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. One more question about Stellar. You've got something like 17 houses in the Whitlock neighborhood, which could get as much as $20,000 apiece for renovations and repairs. What is the largest number of homes do you think that you could include in that program that so that people could fix them up in some way?
Well, we're funded for 20 homes. And what we ended up doing, they're not actually all in the Whitlock neighborhood. They are scattered throughout the city. We really struggled to get the program off the ground, focusing just on that one neighborhood. So we did open it up with consent from IHCDA. We did open it up citywide, and that certainly changed the dynamics. We brought a new administrator on board, a new nonprofit to administer that program, and it's going very well. So we have funding for 20, but the interesting thing is if we see more demand than that, that is a program that is available. We can go back outside of Stellar and ask for more funding for that program. And I have a feeling that, you know, once the work starts getting done, and that will happen in the next few months, and people see the benefit, that good news will spread like wildfire, and we will probably have more demand for that program. So we're going to let it kind of play out. I think that group's doing a good job, and we're at 17 now just because some properties sold and some things came and went, some people came and went. So we'll need to add three more in there and be at 20 and go from there.
As a homeowner myself, I know that $20,000 perhaps doesn't go as far as some people might think it would go. How do you determine whether people are using that money on the right kinds of projects or projects that will make the city look good or beautify the neighborhoods? What are your considerations in that regard?
There are very strict guidelines in how that money is used, and that's part of having this group come in and administer this. So they're looking at the need, but they also have an inspector come in and inspect the house. and really advise them that, you know, these are the things that are can be funded, and these are the needs that we see in your house, and this is how to match it all up. So there is a very rigorous process they go through to determine how, you know, what's done, what kind of work, and what's needed and not. And they really focus on a lot of the you know, infrastructure of the house, if you will, the heating, cooling, the roof, making sure if there's an older person there that, you know, it's handicap accessible where they need it, fixing some of those types of issues. So it is very spelled out, and the group that we brought on to administer this takes care of all that. It's not a decision that the city itself makes.
So lastly on all of this, it sounds like 2018 might end up being the busiest year you've had yet with respect to Stellar and all of the work that'll be done. How do you manage doing all of that simultaneously? How do you manage possible disruptions to people's lives, to traffic flow, to things like that all at once to try and get it done as much as you'd like to next year?
Well, when you just said that, I took a deep breath. I hadn't thought of it that way. But, you know, this year was pretty rough because we were doing a lot of work in our downtown, a lot of infrastructure work under the ground to get ready for the next steps. We wanted to fix the things you couldn't see first, and it was rough. And we know next year will be rough when you have all of this construction on all these projects starting. You know, I always say our biggest challenge right now in city government is capacity. We are doing so many things, and I'm fully aware that all the key leaders that we have in place are stretched. You know, our key employees are stretched to the max, trying to do all these things. So it will be interesting this coming year. My hope is that it will be exciting enough that the public's engaged and our staff's engaged to really see these things start to come to life. And we've talked about Fusion 54 for so long, and when people actually see it, it's really going to be exciting, and the trails and these parks. I mean, Pike Place is going to be, it's going to be an amazing place in our downtown like we've not seen before, and really a gathering place, a real sense of pride, and hopefully that'll carry us through, but I have no doubts there will be some bumps in the road, and there will be some rough moments.
So on to other things. After something like 20 years of talking about it, it looks like the county courthouse might finally get its clock tower back. Have you been involved with that project, either trying to raise money or talking to people about it? Because obviously it's going to be a big thing smack in the middle of your downtown.
The city's been involved in that discussion since I came in office and tried to be very supportive to the private fundraising. You know, the city has stepped forward and said that we will contribute some money as well. As it is in our downtown, we've always tried to take a back seat, if you will, to the county on that issue. I mean, obviously, it's the county courthouse, but you know, it does affect downtown Crawfordsville, and it will have an impact on our downtown. And sometimes, you know, local people lose sight of that. We drive by it every day. It kind of just becomes part of the landscape, and you go on. But when we have out-of-town visitors, that is frequently one of the first questions I am asked. Is, you know, what is the deal with your courthouse? That looks very strange, the way it's laid out and the clearly chopped off piece and all of that. So I'm excited. I was thinking downtown the other night during party night, and everybody's downtown. Next year at this time, that tower will be lit up and looming over us, which will have a really neat feel to it. So we've been involved, been supportive. You know, I'm looking forward to it happening.
I had forgotten the story, and so I went and looked it up earlier today, and I'll relay it now quickly to the listeners. You can find old photos easily that show a similar-looking clock tower in the past, and I understand from actually reading a page on the state's bicentennial website that the tower was removed at about the time the U.S. was getting into World War II. The metal bell that was inside was melted down to actually contribute metal to the war effort, and you know, it's been since that time that sort of chopped off look has happened, right?
Yes, this goes back quite a ways. And, you know, the interesting part of that story is that, you know, it was removed because someone painting a picture, if you will, of the courthouse had come in and said, you know, I'm standing across the street looking at this, and this tower is leaning, and you probably should do something. And so in haste, there were a lot of things going on. They just removed the tower, and that was that. It was melted down, and they went on. For decades, people in this community had scoffed at that somewhat, saying, that it probably wasn't really leaning, you know, it was an overreaction and all these things were happening. What's really interesting is, as we moved forward on this, you know, they started talking about putting the new tower up. We brought engineers in to analyze the building, what can it support, well, you know, all those kind of things. And they found inside the structure the cracks where it probably really was leaning back then. So that really ramped up the cost of putting the new tower on. Now, the new tower is much lighter than the old tower was, but you had to go back and really take supports all the way down through the building because it wouldn't support it otherwise. And there was credible evidence, the engineers found, that it probably was leaning back in the 1940s or 30s, whenever it was.
Don't want a clock tower falling on a passerby.
That might not be good. Or a courthouse.
That's right. Well, your courthouse has actually needed a few renovations in recent years. Anybody who's gone by it in the last couple of 3 years has noticed how the outside entrances have changed, how the parking lot has changed. You've done some security work on the inside of it. It probably still needs some more modernizing. I mean, it's like a lot of Indiana courthouses, especially in this neck of the woods. Greencastle's is kind of the same way, where it's got this very old school feel if you walk inside of it, big, heavy wooden doors and a lot of cases. Is this the right thing actually to be spending money on when you could use some more R&R on the courthouse?
Well, I suppose that's ultimately a question for the county government. I mean, the courthouse is not a city property, and it's not something that the city maintains or that I have any real direct role in how that's played out. But I know there's a lot of discussion going on right now on the county side with the county council and the county commissioners about the future of that facility. It has been renovated in recent years. There's a lot of discussion right now about what should be in there versus, you know, the courts versus the other county offices. And it's a tough dynamic when, you know, you have the courts in the building and the need for security associated with the courts, which we all understand. And you also have county offices in which people maybe go pay their taxes, let's say. And so to go pay your taxes, you go through security. That's kind of a strange dynamic that I know the county is discussing, and they'll have to think about, you know, whether they put some more money into that building to renovate some more in those offices, or they move some of those offices out to another facility. You know, I'm not sure. That'll be a county decision. But there's no doubt it's a complex decision, and ultimately comes down to dollars and cents. And, you know, when you look at the spending, I guess that's a question everybody has to answer. I think the important thing to keep in mind with the clock tower, it's largely privately funded, and the public piece that the county's putting in, not all of it, but a good portion of it is innkeeper's tax. That's people visiting the community, you know, on tourism, those kinds of things, are on business. So I think they've tried to soften that and say, you know, if we're going to spend a dollar, we're getting X number of dollars on the private side. They've tried to soften and do as best they could, but you know, ultimately you've got to have a community that looks nice and doesn't look, you know, when people come in, it doesn't look like we don't care.
On to one or two more things in our last few minutes. You and I talked when you returned from the state's economic development trip to Japan about your city's prospects there, and you said that you had some meetings scheduled. I wanted to check in and see if any of those had happened yet.
So a couple of those have happened. We're in the process of taking those discussions to the next level, and you just never know with those if, you know, will anything come of it or not? It's still too early to tell. One discussion that we've had that is continuing, and we've had some discussion directly with the Consul General for Japan, based in Chicago. They are doing a little bit of a tour of Indiana and some key communities. We're optimistic. We're on that list being considered right now. We don't know if that tour will include Crawfordsville, but we're certainly lobbying for that to happen. So several things have continued to occur out of that trip. There are some more visits coming up. In fact, we just are finishing a site selector visit today. My staff is still with them as I'm on this program. And that's an indirect spinoff of the Japan trip as well. Also recently had an interview with the Japan Times newspaper, which is the largest English-Japanese newspaper. Had that interview, and I believe that story will run in January. But you know, they're doing a story on Indiana and Japanese investment.
What kinds of things did they ask you?
Well, they were really looking. You know, they interviewed two mayors, and they were looking at kind of contrasting a community with a lot of Japanese investment, and then a community like ours, which has a little but not much, and is kind of getting in the game. But they really were focused on, you know, why Japan? What does your community? What does this mean to your community? Why, you know, what's unique about the Indiana and the Midwest for these Japanese investors? And how do you see this relationship? You know, a lot of questions like that. And I guess we'll see how the story, you know, comes out in the end. It may be a fraction of, I'm sure it'll be a fraction of what we talked about. But those are good tools and good exposure for our community in that market as well.
You also talked about this recently with the League of Women Voters, and I'm wondering what they wanted to know from you about your plans for outside investment.
Yeah, you know, I've had the opportunity to present a few times on the Japanese trip, and did do one with the League recently, and people have really good questions. They're trying to understand those dynamics and how those decisions are made, what type of investment it represents in Indiana and in our own community. And then you get, you know, just the questions that people are curious about, you know, what it's like to maybe travel in Japan and what were the business meetings like. You know, you hear a lot about the protocol and the seating order and some of those kinds of little questions about that sometimes. But those, anytime I presented, has been very well received, and people are very, very interested in that relationship and understanding it better.
In just our last minute or so, the Crawfordsville Electric Light and Power Company is going to get about a 4% decrease in its rates as it buys wholesale electricity from Indiana Municipal Power Agency. Will city residents get any decrease in their bills as a result of that?
Yes, your bill is calculated based on what we pay for the energy, and then you have, you know, basically our side of it, which is the distribution system and such. So keeping in mind that there was a rate increase a few months ago, and now you're going to have this decrease on the power purchase side. It largely will come out to a wash for the residential side, I believe. The commercial side will probably see a bit of a decrease. The important thing to keep in mind there is that we are unique in how we are reinvesting in our infrastructure. You're not seeing that in a lot of the utilities right now. And you're certainly not seeing that in public utilities. Even some of our fellow IMPA communities are not reinvesting in their infrastructure, and we are investing very heavily. One of the topics just today with the site selector was the redundancy that we've created in our electric grid internally. You have to be doing those things. And we look with a little bit of concern at other communities and say, you know, they're not investing in this, and they're going to have some problems down the road, and we're trying to prevent that. So rates are pretty stable, slight decrease, especially on that industrial side. We're already very, very competitive. We feel good about where we are, and we hope the trend continues.
All right. Well, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. That's the time we've got for Ask the Mayor, but we'll catch up with you probably just a little after Christmas, I think, next month.
Very good. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these shows archived at our website. That's WBAA.org. And if you'd ever like to send a question for any of our four mayors, do that via email. The email address is ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. You can also tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.